Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of The Relations of Sidi Khour, hosted by yours truly, Shahrazad. Today, we delve into the mystical and captivating world of ancient tales with not just one, but two new stories. So sit back, relax, and let the tales of The Relations of Sidi Khour transport you to a world of wonder and enchantment. Stay tuned as we unfold these mesmerizing stories, filled with adventure, intrigue, and the timeless magic of the ancient world. When the son of the Chan had, as before, seized upon Sidi and was carrying him away, Sidi spoke as formerly, but the son of the Chan shook his head without uttering a word, and Sidi began the following relation. A long while since there lived in a happy country a man and a woman. The man had many bad qualities and cared for nothing but eating, drinking, and sleeping. At last, his wife said unto him, "By thy mode of life, thou hast wasted all thine inheritance. Arise thee then from thy bed, and while I am in the fields, go you out and look about you." As he, therefore, according to these words, was looking about him, he saw a multitude of people pass behind the pagoda with their herds, and birds, foxes, and dogs crowding and noising together around a particular spot. Thither he went, and there found a bladder of butter, so he took it home and placed it upon the shelf. When his wife returned and saw the bladder of butter upon the shelf, she asked, "Where found you this bladder of butter?" To this he replied, "I did according to your word, and found this." Then said the woman, "Thou went out but for an instant, and hast already found thus much." Then the man determined to display his abilities, and said, "Procure me then a horse, some clothes, and a bloodhound." The wife provided them accordingly, and the man, taking with him, besides these, his bow, cap, and mantle, seated himself on horseback, led the hound in a leash, and rode forth at random. After he had crossed over several rivers, he espied a fox. "Ah," thought he, "that would serve my wife for a cap." So saying, he pursued the fox, and when it fled into a hamster's hole, the man got off his horse, placed his bow, arrows, and clothes upon the saddle, fastened the bloodhound to the bridle, and covered the mouth of the hole with his cap. The next thing he did was to take a large stone and hammer over the hole with it. This frightened the fox, which ran out and fled with the cap upon its head. The hound followed the fox and drew the horse along with it, so that they both vanished in an instant, and the man was left without any clothes. After he had turned back a long way, he reached the country of a mighty Chan, entered the Chan's stable, and concealed himself in a stack of hay, so that merely his eyes were left uncovered. Not long afterwards, the beloved of the Chan was walking out, and wishing to look at a favourite horse, she approached close to the hayrick, placed the talisman of life of the Chan's kingdom upon the ground, left it there, and returned back to the palace without recollecting it. The man saw the wonderful stone, but was too lazy to pick it up. At sunset, the cows came by, and the stone was beaten into the ground. Some time afterwards, a servant came and cleansed the place, and the wonderful stone was cast aside upon a heap. On the following day, the people were informed, by the beating of the kettle drums, that the beloved of the Chan had lost the wonderful stone. At the same time, all the magicians and soothsayers and interpreters of signs were summoned and questioned upon the subject. On hearing this, the man in the hayrick crept out as far as his breast, and when the people thronged around him and asked, "What hast thou learned?" he replied, "I am a magician." On hearing these words, they exclaimed, "Because the wondrous stone of the Chan is missing, all the magicians in the country are summoned to appear before him. Do you then draw nigh unto the Chan?" The man said, "I have no clothes." Hereupon the whole crowd hastened to the Chan, and announced unto him thus, "In the hayrick there lieth a magician who has no clothes. This magician would draw nigh unto you, but he has naught to appear in." The Chan said, "Send unto him this robe of cloth, and let him approach." It was done. The man was fetched, and after he had bowed down to the Chan, he was asked what he needed for the performance of his magic charms. To this question he replied, "For the performance of my magic charms, it is needful that I should have the head of a swine, some cloths of five colours, and some baling, a sacred figure of dal or paste." When all these things were prepared, the magician deposited the swine's head at the foot of a tree, dressed it with the cloths of five colours, fastened on the large baling, and passed the whole of 3 nights in meditation. On the day appointed, all the people assembled, and the magician, having put on a great durga, cloak, placed himself, with the swine's head in his hand, in the street. When they were all assembled together, the magician, showing the swine's head, said, "Hear not, and there not." All were gladdened at hearing these words. "Because, therefore," said the magician, "the wonderful stone is not to be found among the people, we must seek for it elsewhere." With these words, the magician, still holding the swine's head in his hand, drew nigh unto the palace, and the Chan and his attendants followed him, singing songs of rejoicing. When, at last, the magician arrived at the heap, he stood suddenly still and exclaimed, "There lies the wonderful stone." Then, first removing some of the earth, he drew forth the stone and cleansed it. "Thou art a mighty magician," joyfully exclaimed all who beheld it. "Thou art the master of magic with the swine's head. Lift up thyself that thou mayest receive thy reward." The Chan said, "Thy reward shall be whatsoever thou wilt." The magician, who thought only of the property he had lost, said, "Give unto me a horse with saddle and bridle, a bow and arrows, a cap, a mantle, a hound and a fox, such things give unto me." At these words the Chan exclaimed, "Give him all that he desireth." This was done, and the magician returned home with all that he desired, and with 2 elephants, one carrying meat and the other butter. His wife met him close to his dwelling, with brandy for him to drink, and said, "Now, indeed, thou art become a mighty man." Thereupon they went into the house, and when they had laid themselves down to sleep, the wife said to him, "Where hast thou found so much flesh and so much butter?" Then her husband related to her circumstantially the whole affair, and she answered him, saying, "Verily, thou art a stupid ass. Tomorrow I will go with a letter to the Shan." The wife accordingly wrote a letter, and in the letter were the following words: "Because it was known unto me that the lost wondrous stone retained some evil influence over the Chan, I have, for the obviating of that influence, desired of him the dog and the fox. What I may receive for my reward depends upon the pleasure of the Chan." The Chan read the letter through and sent costly presents to the magician, and the magician lived pleasantly and happily. Now in a neighbouring country there dwelt 7 Chans brethren. Once upon a time they betook themselves, for pastime, to an extensive forest, and there they discovered a beauteous maiden with a buffalo, and they asked, "What are you 2 doing here? Whence come you?" The maiden answered, "I come from an eastern country, and am the daughter of a Chan. This buffalo accompanies me." At these words these others replied, "We are the 7 brethren of a Chan, and have no wife. Wilt thou be our wife?" The maiden answered, "So be it." But the maiden and the buffalo were 2 mangush, a species of evil spirit like the Shumnu, and were seeking out men whom they might devour. The male mangush was a buffalo, and the female, she who became wife to the brethren. It is in accordance with the customs of Tibet for a woman of that country to have several husbands. After the mangush had slain, yearly, one of the brethren of the Chan, there was only 1 remaining, and because he was suffering from a grievous sickness, the ministers consulted together and said, "For the sickness of the other Chans, we have tried all means of cure, and yet have found no help. Neither do we in this case know what to advise. But the magician with the swine's head dwells only 2 mountains off from us, and he is held in great estimation. Let us, without further delay, send for him to our assistance." Upon this, 4 mounted messengers were dispatched for the magician, and when they arrived at his dwelling, they made known to him the object of their mission. "I will," said the magician, "consider of this matter in the course of the night, and will tell you in the morning what is to be done." During the night, he related to his wife what was required of him, and his wife said, "You are looked upon, up to this time, as a magician of extraordinary skill, but from this time there is an end to your reputation. However, it cannot be helped, so go, you must." On the following morning, the magician said to the messengers, "During the night time I have pondered upon this matter, and a good omen has presented itself to me in a dream. Let me not tarry any longer, but ride forth today." The magician thereupon equipped himself in a large cloak, bound his hair together on the crown of his head, carried in his left hand the rosary, and in his right the swine's head, enveloped in the cloths of five colours. When, in this guise, he presented himself before the dwelling place of the Chan, the two Mangush were sorely frightened, and thought to themselves, "This man has quite the appearance, quite the countenance, of a man of learning." Then the magician, first placing a baling on the pillow of the bed, lifted up the swine's head and muttered certain magic words. The wife of the Chan, seeing this, discontinued, tormenting the soul of the Chan, and fled in all haste out of the room. The Chan, by this conduct, being freed from the pains of sickness, sank into a sound sleep. "What is this?" exclaimed the magician, filled with affright. "The disease has grown worse. The sick man uttereth not a sound. The sick man hath departed." Thus thinking, he cried, "Chan, Chan." But because the Chan uttered no sound, the magician seized the swine's head, vanished through the door, and entered the treasure chamber. No sooner had he done so than, "Thief, thief," sounded in his ears, and the magician fled into the kitchen. But the cry of "Stop that thief, stop that thief," still followed him. Thus pursued, the magician thought to himself, "This night it is of no use to think of getting away, so I will, therefore, conceal myself in a corner of the stable." Thus thinking, he opened the door, and there found a buffalo that lay there as if wearied with a long journey. The magician took the swine's head and struck the buffalo three times between the horns, whereupon the buffalo sprang up and fled like the wind. But the magician followed after the buffalo, and when he approached the spot where he was, he heard the male Mangush say to his female companion, "Yonder magician knew that I was in the stable. With his frightful swine's head, he struck me three blows, so that it was time for me to escape from him." And the Chan's wife replied, "I too am so afraid, because of his great knowledge, that I would not willingly return, for of a certainty, things will go badly with us. Tomorrow, he will gather together the men with weapons and arms, and will say unto the women, 'Bring hither firing.' When this is done, he will say, 'Lead the buffalo hither.' And when thou appearest, he will say unto thee, 'Put off the form thou hast assumed.' And because all resistance would be useless, the people perceiving thy true shape will fall upon thee with swords and spears and stones. And when they have put thee to death, they will consume thee with fire. At last the magician will cause me to be dragged forth and consumed with fire. Oh, but I am sore afraid." When the magician heard these words, he said to himself, "After this fashion may the thing be easily accomplished." Upon this, he betook himself, with the swine's head to the Chan, lifted up the baling, murmured his words of magic, and asked, "How is it now with the sickness of the Chan?" And the Chan replied, "Upon the arrival of the Master of Magic, the sickness passed away, and I have slept soundly." Then the magician spake as follows, "Tomorrow then, give this command to thy ministers, that they collect the whole of the people together, and that the women be desired to bring firing with them." When, in obedience to these directions, there were two lofty piles of bundles of sticks gathered together, the magician said, "Place my saddle upon the buffalo." Then the magician rode upon the saddled buffalo three times around the assembled people, then removed the saddle from the buffalo, smote it three times with the swine's head, and said, "Put off the form thou hast assumed." At these words, the buffalo was transformed into a fearful, ugly mangush. His eyes were bloodshot. His upper tusks descended to his breast. His bottom tusks reached up to his eyelashes, so that he was fearful to behold. When the people had hewed this mangush to pieces with sword and with arrow, with spear and with stone, and his body was consumed upon one of the piles of sticks, then said the magician, "Bring forth the wife of the Chan." And with loud cries did the wife of the Chan come forth, and the magician smote her with the swine's head, and said, "Appear in thine own form." Immediately her long tusks and bloodshot eyes exhibited the terrific figure of a female mangush. After the wife of the Chan had been cut in pieces and consumed by fire, the magician mounted his horse, but the people bowed themselves before him and strewed grain over him, presented him with gifts, and regaled him so on every side that he was only enabled to reach the palace of the Chan on the following morning. Then spake the Chan, full of joy, to the magician, "How can I reward you for the great deed that thou hast done?" And the magician answered, "In our country there are but few nose sticks for oxen to be found. Give me, I pray you, some of these nose sticks." Thus spake he, and the Chan had him conducted home with 3 sacks of nose sticks and 7 elephants bearing meat and butter. Near unto his dwelling, his wife came with brandy to meet him. And when she beheld the elephants, she exclaimed, "Now indeed thou art become a mighty man." Then they betook themselves to their house, and at night time the wife of the magician asked him, "How camest thou to be presented with such gifts?" The magician replied, "I have cured the sickness of the Chan, and consumed with fire 2 mangush." At these words she replied, "Verily, thou hast behaved very foolishly. After such a beneficial act, to desire nothing but nose sticks for cattle. Tomorrow, I myself will go to the Chan." On the morrow, the wife drew near unto the Chan and presented unto him a letter from the magician. And in this letter stood the following words: "Because the magician was aware that of the great evil of the Chan, a lesser evil still remained behind, he desired of him the nose sticks. What he is to receive as a reward depends upon the pleasure of the Chan." "He is right," replied the Chan, and he summoned the magician with his father and mother and all his relations before him, and received them with every demonstration of honour. "But for you I should have died. The kingdom would have been annihilated, the ministers and all the people consumed as the food of the mangush. I, therefore, will honour thee." And he bestowed upon him proofs of his favour. "Both man and wife were intelligent," exclaimed the son of the Chan. "Ruler of destiny," replied Sidi, "thou hast spoken words. Sarwala misdu jakzang." Thus spake he, and burst from the sack through the air. Sidi's fourth relation treats of the magician with the head of the swine. As the Chan's son was journeying along as before, laden with Sidi, Sidi inquired of him, as formerly, who should tell a tale. But the son of the Chan shook his head without speaking a word, and Sidi began as follows. Many years ago, Guchanashang reigned over a certain happy land. This Chan had a wife and a son, whose name was Sunshine, Narani Garal. Upon the death of his first wife, the Chan married a second, and by her likewise he had a son, and the name of his second son was Moonshine, Sarani Garal. And when both these sons were grown up, the wife of the Chan thought to herself, "So long as Sunshine, the elder brother, lives, Moonshine, the younger, will never be Chan over this land." Some time after this, the wife of the Chan fell sick and tossed and tumbled about on her bed from the seeming agony she endured. And the Chan inquired of her, "What can be done for you, my noble spouse?" To these words the wife of the Chan replied, "Even at the time I dwelt with my parents, I was subject to this sickness, but now it is become past bearing. I know, indeed, but one way of removing it, and that way is so impracticable that there is nothing left for me but to die." Hereupon spake the Chan, "Tell unto me this way of help, and though it should cost me half my kingdom, thou shalt have it." tell me what thou requirest. Thus spake he, and his wife replied with the following words, If the heart of one of the Chan's sons were roasted in the fat of the Gunsa, a beast, but thou wilt not, of course, sacrifice sunshine for this purpose, and I myself bear moonshine, his heart I will not consume, so that there is now nothing left for me but to die. The Chan replied, Of a surety sunshine is my son, and inexpressibly dear unto me, but in order that I may not lose thee, I will tomorrow deliver him over to the Jagatchi, the servants of justice. Moonshine overheard these words, and hastened to his brother, and said, Tomorrow they will murder thee. When he had related all the circumstances, the brother replied, Since it is so, do you remain at home, honoring your father and mother? The time of my flight is come. Then said Moonshine, with a troubled heart, Alone I will not remain, but I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. Because the following day was appointed for the murder, the two brothers took a sack with baling cakes from the altar, crept out at night, for it was the night of the full moon, from the palace, and journeyed on day and night through the mountainous country, until they at length arrived at the course of a dried-up river. Because their food was finished and the river held no water, Moonshine fell to the earth utterly exhausted. Then spake the elder brother, full of affliction, I will go and seek water, but do you watch an instant until I come down from the high places. After some vain attempts, Sunshine returned and found that his brother had departed this life. After he had, with great tenderness, covered the body of his brother with stones, he wandered over high mountains and then arrived at the entrance of a cave. Within the cave sat an aged Arshi. Whence comest thou? Inquired the old man. Thy countenance betokeneth deep affliction. And when the youth had related all that had passed, the old man, taking with him the means of awakening the dead, went with the youth to the grave and called Moonshine back to life. Will ye be unto me as sons? Thus spake the old man, and the two young men became as sons unto him. Not far from this place, there reigned a mighty Chan of fearful power, and the time was approaching in this country when the fields were watered, but the crocodiles prevented this. The crocodiles frequented a marsh at the source of the river and would not allow the water to stream forth until such times as a son of the tiger year had been offered to them as food. After a time it happened that when search had been made in vain for a son of the tiger year, certain people drew nigh unto the Chan and said, Near unto the source of the river dwelleth the old Arshi, and with him a son of the tiger year. Thither led we our cattle to drink, and we saw him. When he heard this, the Chan said, Go and fetch him. Accordingly, the messengers were dispatched for him, and when they arrived at the entrance of the cave, the Arshi himself came forth. What is it that ye seek here? Inquired the aged Arshi. The Chan, replied they, speaketh to thee thus. Thou hast a son of the tiger year. My kingdom hath need of him. Send him unto me. But the Arshi said, Who could have told you so? Who, indeed, would dwell with an old Arshi? Thus speaking, he retired into his cave, closed the door after him, and concealed the youth in a stone chest, placed the lid on him, and cemented up the crevices with clay, as if it was from the distillation of arak. But the messengers, having broken down the door, thrust themselves into the cave, searched it, and then said, Since he whom we sought is not here, we are determined that nothing shall be left in the cave. Thus speaking, they drew their swords, and the youth said, Out of fear for the Arshi, hurt not my father, I am here. And when the youth was come forth, the messengers took him with them, but the Arshi they left behind them weeping and sorrowing. When the youth entered into the palace of the Chan, the daughter of the Chan beheld him and loved him, and encircled his neck with her arms. But the attendants addressed the Chan, saying, Today is the day appointed for the casting of the son of the tiger year into the waters. Upon this the Chan said, Let him then be cast into the waters. But when they would have led him forth for that purpose, the daughter of the Chan spake and said, Cast him not into the waters, or cast me into the waters with him." And when the Chan heard these words, he was angered and said, "Because this maiden careth so little for the welfare of the kingdom, over which I am Chan, let her be bound fast unto the son of the tiger year, and let them be cast together into the waters." And the attendant said, "It shall be according as you have commanded." And when the youth was bound fast, and with the maiden cast into the waters, he cried out, "Since I am the son of the tiger year, it is certainly lawful for them to cast me into the waters. But why should this charming maiden die, who so loveth me?" But the maiden said, "Since I am but an unworthy creature, it is certainly lawful for them to cast me into the waters. But wherefore do they cast in this beauteous youth?" Now the crocodiles heard these words, felt compassion, and placed the lovers once more upon the shore. And no sooner had this happened than the streams began to flow again. And when they were thus saved, the maiden said to the youth, "Come with me, I pray you, unto the palace." And he replied, "When I have sought out my father Arshi, then will I come, and we will live together, unsevered as man and wife." Accordingly, the youth returned to the cave of the old Arshi and knocked at the door. "I am thy son," said he. "My son," replied the old man, "has the Chan taken and slain. Therefore it is that I sit here and weep." At these words the son replied, "Of a verity, I am thy son. The Chan indeed bade them cast me into the waters, but because the crocodiles devoured me not, I am returned unto you. Weep not, O my father." Arshi then opened the door, but he had suffered his beard and the hair of his head to grow, so that he looked like a dead man. Sunshine washed him therefore with milk and with water, and aroused him by tender words from his great sorrow. Now, when the maiden returned back again to the palace, the Chan and the whole people were exceedingly amazed. "The crocodiles," they exclaimed, "have, contrary to their wont, felt compassion for this maiden and spared her. This is indeed a very wonder." So the whole people passed around the maiden, bowing themselves down before her. But the Chan said, "That the maiden is returned is indeed very good, but the son of the tiger year is assuredly devoured." At these words his daughter replied unto him, "The son of the tiger year assuredly is not devoured. On account of his goodness, his life was spared him." And when she said this, all were more than ever surprised. "Arise," said the Chan to his ministers, "lead this youth hither." Agreeably to these commands, the ministers hastened to the cave of the aged Arshi. Both Arshi and the youth arose, and when they approached unto the dwelling of the Chan said, "For the mighty benefits which this youth has conferred upon us and upon our dominions, we feel ourselves bound to go forth to meet him." Thus spake he, and he went forth to meet the youth, and led him into the interior of the palace, and placed him upon one of the seats appropriated to the nobles. "O thou most wondrous youth," he exclaimed, "art thou indeed the son of Arshi?" The youth replied, "I am the son of a Chan, but because my stepmother, out of the love she bare to her own son, sought to slay me, I fled, and accompanied by my younger brother, arrived at the cave of the aged Arshi." When the son of the Chan related all this, the Chan loaded him with honours, and gave his daughters for wives unto the two brothers, and sent them, with many costly gifts and a good retinue, home to their own kingdom. Thither they went, drew nigh unto the palace, and wrote a letter as follows: "To the Chan their father, the two brothers are returned back again." Now the father and mother had for many years bewailed the loss of both their sons, and their sorrows had rendered them so gloomy that they remained ever alone. On receipt of this letter, they sent forth a large body of people to meet their children. But because the wife of the Chan saw both the youths approaching with costly gifts and a goodly retinue, so great was her envy that she died. "She was very justly served," exclaimed the son of the Chan. "Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala, Mistud Yonksang." Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus, Sidi's fifth relation treats of Sunshine and his brother. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. I hope you liked my tale. If you did, please follow me on Sci-Fi Tales to listen to more tales every week. You can also share your thoughts and opinions on our social media. I appreciate your feedback and support. Don't miss the next episode of Sci-Fi Tales, the show where we bring you stories of science fiction and fantasy. Good night, and see you soon.